we feel very comfortable of carrying that conversation onward. So when you're communicating with a bot, it should feel no different than if you're texting a friend or a colleague or a family member. It should have that same experience, that same UI.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today I'm with the team from Conversation Health, and this is the only platform that I have found that is designed specifically for the needs of the pharmaceutical industry with natural language processing and machine learning. Now, as you can imagine, there are so many applications of this, from medical and clinical to sales and marketing. Today, we're going to focus on the sales and marketing applications. So I have Dr. John Reeves, who is the co-founder and CEO. Welcome.
Morning.
And I have Richard Marcel, who is the COO. Welcome.
Good morning, Dr. Andre.
Good morning. So maybe we'll just start, before we get into all the nitty-gritty, because there's so much cool stuff to just talk about with this, let's just get you to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourself. Do you want to go first, Dr. John?
Sure, absolutely. So first off, pleasure to be here. I'm an engineer physician by training. So I've had a good 10 years of clinical practice here in Toronto, where I did primary care and a little bit of sports medicine on the side. In 1994, at the end in October, in my first year of practice, I had patients coming in with printouts from the internet, which was a bit of a shock to me as a young doctor that my patients would actually know more than me about their particular conditions. And so probably an unknown thing is that, I started probably the world's first digital business focused on pharma in October of 1994. Mm-hmm. So starting to go out to help pharma understand how they would best tap into this. And over the next 5-6 years, I grew that business and ultimately exited by selling it to Reed Elsevier. Mm-hmm. Worked in the Elsevier family for a number of years, and then ended up in New York running the global digital health practice for McCann Healthcare worldwide. So working with all of our agencies around the world, really focused on innovation and how we would translate that into our big global pharma clients.
Okay. And Richard, could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. And Dr. John, it's amazing when you think about it. 20, 25 years ago, patients were already disrupting our business. Forever ago, but we're still catching up. We're still catching up to them, which is good. My background is similar but different from John's, in that I've got molecular biochemistry as my undergrad, but ultimately I'm a bit of a biznet. I literally joined the industry out of school, and I'm truly a pharma insider. I spent 10 years at Johnson & Johnson in a classic, pharma development class, sales, marketing, business development, and ultimately digital transformation, doing things like John did. Beyond that, I was lucky enough to launch a couple of biotech companies out of Silicon Valley, really learning the art of moving molecules from bench to ultimately global clinical development. And before joining forces at Conversation Health, I ran a strategy agency that focused on real deep digital transformation. And of course, we had an extensive set of life science clients. So stuff like Veeva, Salesforce is so 10 years ago. We're now in the era of conversational AI, which is kind of exciting.
It's a perfect combination between the two of you. So there's the medical and the engineering, and then there's the pharma and biotech. So it's a really nice mix together with you two. So really nice.
From the outside, customer-led, but also on the inside, culture, processes, capabilities-led. And it's so important that the two meet and marry really beautifully.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we could just get, just for fun, a little known unusual fact about both of you.
Richard, why don't you go first?
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm listening, John.
You're listening. Well, And what we say now, of course, will only be shared amongst the three of us.
Of course.
So,
exactly.
You know, I think I can maybe tell people that I am a addict of Starbucks. As you can see, I have more Starbucks stars than anyone else in Canada. I constantly am being told that because I don't redeem them. But I have a kind of a plan, which is once I hit, you know, a million stars, I'm actually going to acquire one of the local cafes.
Right? Good idea.
It's a significant problem, and yet at the same time, caffeine does fuel creativity and innovation. So
absolutely.
It's a good addiction.
It's exactly. And I'm sure caffeine is very good for your heart and all sorts of things.
I agree. Richard.
Good problem to have, good problem to have. I'll give you I'll regress into my past a little bit. I'll just say that as a student, my summer job was that of an assistant golf professional. So I used to teach golf for summer fun. That proved to be extremely helpful in my first job carrying a bag as a sales rep. In my territory, I had two areas where they were teaching schools. And it was nearly impossible to see physicians, like not at all. They were no see physicians.
Yeah.
Unless we traded sales calls for golf lessons. So that proved really, really great from my personal perspective to reach some really important docs and drive prescribing behavior. And I'll just say to this day, I don't know if my old boss was super impressed or super unimpressed.
Well, it's innovation, isn't it?
It worked.
Yeah, you were using innovation to achieve your goals even then.
Exactly.
Wow, that's so interesting. So let's move across to the platform now. And so with the platform, what would be the main types of problems that pharma sales and marketing teams would come to you with?
What's been very busy over the last 6 months is the commercial side or commercial application, right? Certainly in the context of sales forces being down in a COVID environment, highly problematic. We need to find ways to virtualize that and drive, re-engage our physicians quickly. But the same thing, how do we also deploy, or the parallel is how do we deploy programs in support of our patient support programs or patient programming as they struggle to access our resources, or they struggle to see their nurses, caseworkers, or even physicians to a certain extent.
Wonderful. And so with the Salesforce, because that's a really hot topic. I mean, it's been a hot topic even without COVID, because the access has gone down and down year after year. But with COVID, obviously that's been a massive area. So how do you help pharma companies get that engagement with the physicians when they don't have the access they used to have?
That's right. I think conceptually, I think what we're introducing in the lack of a better word, the marketing mix or the engagement mix of a pharmaceutical company is the ability, I'll call it self-service or pull. We've traditionally been very promotionally focused or push focused. Now we are building self-service facilities for physicians to engage, think of an HCP portal, and something that they can do 24/7, weeknights, weekends, and others, right? So they have the opportunity to engage, and they want to engage pharma. They now do it through a virtual human-like capability where they can access the information they need when they need. That does a number of things, right? So today, the bulk of our promotional or push activities are centered around that 15% of physicians who obviously account for half of our volume or our scripts, which is really important. On the other hand, we're underserving 85% of our physicians and probably 50% of our potential script and script usage and volume.
Mm.
Those push or those pull capabilities allow us to readdress the entire universe of physicians, but also drive what we would call more marginal or moderate engagement.
Mm.
So again, it's really introducing the element of customer service, self-service to the marketing mix and drive additional reach, additional frequency, and frankly, just better engagement because it's on the terms and time of the physicians or the patient's needs.
You know, I remember back to when I was practicing, you know, this model of pull is really powerful, right?
Yeah.
And so being there at that moment of need for the physician to resolve a clinical, very practical challenge, It's kind of the dream that we always had, physicians and pharma, but the odds that you can pull and have a live sales rep or a live MSL, you know, in your office at the moment of need is non-existent. It's zero, right? And so literally what we're doing is we're using the inherent power of conversational AI, which is the ability to have a conversation and have it on demand and scalable, right? So literally every physician should have the ability to reach out and talk to an MSL or a rep for any brand 24/7 and have that need met. Now, of course, as marketers, and Richard will attest to this, the power of being able to deliver a marketing push conversation after a pull experience is probably the most powerful opportunity, right? It's typically contextual in nature, and from the physician or healthcare professional perspective, it isn't interpreted as being a sales or marketing campaign. Mm. It just seems to be a logical extension and bringing additional value to that interaction. And so, you know, the kind of the concept of pull first, followed by contextual push, is probably the most powerful moment in trying to acquire a physician as a loyalist.
And I did read some study recently about how, because we are so used to immediacy and response these days with so many interactions we have online, you know, that's one area where pharma have been falling down because they just can't get that immediacy thing working properly for the situation. So this solves that problem, and I assume 24/7.
Well, you can imagine, Andrea, that, you know, a physician with a question doesn't have time to overcome the friction of going to a very unique website and navigating through a unique information architecture to find a large piece of text that he has to then navigate through to find the answer to his question. So literally conversational AI reduces that down to a very, very, very low level of friction, where we're no longer searching for content, we're simply asking and getting an answer. And it's that immediacy through a very familiar UI that is, you know, powering this explosion in conversational solutions.
Really cool. And I'll build on that and say, in the context of COVID, Andre, we've all seen the statistics, right? That we've done 5 to 10 years of digital transformation in 6 months. Mm-hmm. I think we, as broad consumers, have also begun to think digital first. We buy groceries digitally. Retail is now digital first, and I actually use a store as a pickup point or a return depot to a certain extent. Yeah. So the mentality of digital first and digital speed is very important. And I think our physicians, our patients, are absolutely expecting the same of us.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been led by companies like Amazon, et cetera. So now we need, that's the bar. You need to basically be able to do the same thing. And until now, pharma haven't been that strong in that area. So this really does help them achieve that much more successfully, for sure. Fascinating. So how does it actually work? I mean, when is it, so it's voice and text. How, is it on a website? Is it in an app? How do people interact with it?
Yeah, so there's lots of different ways one can interact with a conversational experience. So it could be through the typical, let's call it a bot that one would see, a web chat on a website, right? Mm-hmm. Typically, bottom right-hand corner, right, which alerts the user that they don't have to go searching through the site, but they can simply ask a bot a question, and if well designed and structured, that bot can, you know, bring down that friction, provide the answer, and actually drive the physician or the user to the actual page in the site. It's a web experience, of course. Mm-hmm. That can be delivered mobily through either a web experience as well, or through a messaging app experience. Of course, it can also be done through a voice device, whether it be, you know, an Alexa or Amazon Home. We can deliver that as well. And of course, you're now seeing it go through IVR. And the next big future, you know, a year, 2-3 years out, will be the digital human.
Yes.
In all cases, though, you're seeing that there's a foundational conversational structure. Mm-hmm. Right? So it doesn't really matter the touch point.
Yeah.
The bot needs to be able to answer a common set of questions, which typically, you know, for a brand is around 200 and 250 core intents that you need to be able to resolve. And of course, our platform has been designed to do that, right? And that's where, as you mentioned, the NLU comes in, the ability to understand the utterance, whether it is a text utterance or a voice utterance, that's the question, and then align to what the manufacturer wants to deliver, which is, you know, a really important point. So there's lots of different touch points, but a common engine that can power all of them. Of course, one has to realize that there's a subtle difference between the way you engage in voice versus text, but there's a lot of commonality to that can be built in the platform. Richard, you have some add on to that?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful build, John. The other thing, the other channel, by the way, that I just call out, very important for pharma today, and a bit of an older channel. Pharma today engages patients and physicians extensively, and pharmacists extensively through phone. Again, the call centers can be automated with voice technology. Again, for a much faster access or response, right? How many times have you been put on hold waiting for somebody to answer or potentially call back in an hour or two or a day? Massive applications. I'll build on John, and so John provided the external view of the touch points. Mm-hmm. On the inside of the organization, the opportunities, I think, is twofold, is to develop a bit of skill set around development of conversations, right? Conversation, the conversation we're having today is not underpinned by a PDF of 40 pages like a typical monograph is.
Yeah.
We as organizations have to learn to deconstruct regulated content and serve it in small morsels that are easy to consume but still compliant. That's a very important skill for organizations and brands to develop over time. The other piece, and extremely powerful to what John talked about earlier in terms of contextual push, is also building the data capabilities that support and underpin chatbots. Mm. Chatbots are very powerful because they get to intent and very specific morsels of conversations and insight about the physician, her needs, and so on and so forth. We want a data infrastructure that can intake that and then massage it. So we know that when Dr. Andre asks a question, we can follow on with proper contextual responses. Mm. We call that next best response and maybe next best action, which may be checking in with Dr. Andre in an hour from now, in a day from now, in a month from now. So all of that is developing that data muscle is very powerful and super insightful in aggregate for brands, for physician populations, for patient populations, and extremely enriching for the insights that a pharma company can pull from its virtual engagements with its key customers.
You know, I think Richard's highlighting the concept of the journey. Mm. Right? That when you have a conversational experience, text-based as example, we feel very comfortable of carrying that conversation onward. So when you're communicating with a bot, it should feel no different than if you're texting a friend or a colleague or a family member. It should have that same experience, that same UI. And part of that UI that we're all comfortable with is sometimes we initiate the conversation with a friend through a text messaging experience, right? So we'll ask them something and they'll respond. But obviously it's not unusual for them to send a notification to us in the future and initiate a conversation later that day, the next week, whatever that may be. And so that back and forth experience that takes place over time is the inherent nature of conversational experiences and is just brought to life even at a deeper level through conversational AI, where the conversation isn't with a friend, family, or colleague, but literally is with a brand or with a company, or as we mentioned earlier, potentially through a virtual rep or a virtual MSL.
It's very interesting. And so one thing that springs to mind, which you obviously will have addressed, but is pharma, when you've got these conversations, you know, we've got such regulatory, you know, legal, adverse event reporting, et cetera. How do you handle all of that?
Oh, we do. We must. I think part of it is what John described earlier. There's a conversation development process in that, yes, we use lots of AI, but really to match, to understand the user's request and match that request to the proper content.
Yeah.
That content is regulated and pre-approved, right? So while it's free, but our job and our challenge as a provider to life science companies is making sure that we pull the right regulated pre-approved content. Mm-hmm. But we also sequence it and present it and structure it in a way that it feels like a human, normal response or conversation. So that's part one. Part two, in terms of adverse event and really product complaint management, Andre, absolutely key, right? In the context of life sciences, we build a series of algorithms and others, and we use AI to identify potential product complaints, your adverse event, and then there's a series of workflows that are tied to the originating, the organization's adverse event management process or product complaint process and others. But it's super important that we recognize those and we handle those. I'd also say, by the way, it's super important that we properly identify those and not over-report them either. I'll use two examples. Headache can be literally an indication, a side effect, and an adverse event. We need to make sure that as we track and converse, we understand the context of the word headache and not false flag headache as an indication or headache as a side effect or whatever that is for an adverse event. I'll use another one. The context could be bleeding. Well, bleeding could be, product could be used as it could be an indication for a product or a severe adverse event in the case of an anticoagulant, for example. Again, we want the AI to pick up that very quickly, differentiate it, and provide actionability. Absolutely key to our world.
And I think that is one of the things that differentiates you from the old generation chatbots, where you've got such strong linguistic back end to it so that it's really understanding. You know, some of those old chatbots, you'll say, I want this. And they'll say, do you mean? And you go, no, I want this. So what yours does is really understand context and intent and all of those linguistic functions that we have as humans. So that's really helpful.
Absolutely.
What about?
And I build on that a little bit to say yes versus old generation chatbots. I'd also call out though, it's also the difference between even new generation chatbots or conversational AI technologies. Some are very horizontal in scope, right? So a large technology that can be used in retail and telephony and banking may not be as powerful as a solution that's developed strictly and only for life science considerations, right?
Yeah,
there's
absolutely
such complexity in our world, medical, regulatory, legal, by country, by region, by type of user. We were lucky, we verticalized our product, so all of that is built into the framework of the solution.
Yes.
That's kind of game-changing for us, but specifically our clients in
absolutely
terms of application.
And that brings me to another point, which is the globalization of your product. So if you had a global team that wanted to deploy it in the US and Canada and maybe England, Japan, China, South America, you know, how easy is that? Because obviously the language is different, the regulations may be different. Do you have situations where you have done that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say if I step back a little bit to some of the applications, I'd say clinical trial development is inherently a global process.
Yes.
Medical information, med affairs, med education is also inherently a global process. We are scaling a number of those solutions globally. The platform, we were lucky again, our case, we verticalize a platform to do that. And in our case, for lack of a better word, the core language of our solution is machine language.
Yeah.
Maybe tied to English, but ultimately that language can get redeployed into Japanese, German, French, English, whatever that may be.
Nice.
Ultimately, the platform is also learning from all of those different languages and interactions, but pulling it into the common language of the chatbot to continually improve the performance of the core engine, which means ultimately all the country facilities. So the language we tend to use, Andre, is the more our clients deploy, the smarter their bot gets, all of their bots get, but as they also leverage down costs market by market by market.
That's really nice. And what about privacy issues? You know, sometimes, say you were doing something with patients, so you have applications directly for patients like patient adherence and compliance, I understand.
We do.
So when you're talking to patients, how is the privacy aspect handled with that?
Yes, super important, right? At the end of the day, we need to protect the privacy and provide security for all of those interactions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, we fold and we adopt our clients' privacy and security requirements and policies. We meet all of those, right?
Yeah.
All of our, we do work with a highly regulated group of companies. they validate our platform for privacy and security. We integrate with their systems to further provide that integration of privacy and security. Ultimately, the information kind of flows through our platform, but never rests in it.
Okay.
It ultimately rests in our clients' databases and data lakes and others where it gets action.
Okay.
But yeah, we need to, in 2020 and 2021, we need to be building very secure, powerful conversational AI capabilities and infrastructure to meet those requirements.
That's really interesting. And so for the marketing, would the applications be like more the Salesforce and the patient, or are there other marketing applications within there that you see being used for?
So yes to both. I think there's absolutely a number of HCP applications. There's a number of patient applications. Ultimately, they're all, as we described earlier, in the case of the health professional, a lot of it is how do we either supplement or complement humans to provide a better commercial effort?
Mm-hmm.
What type of resources can we deploy so that we can increase the reach, the frequency, or the recency of engagement? Sometimes for loss of exclusivity drugs, we underpin and we've become essentially a virtual sales force.
Mm-hmm.
For heavily promoted products, we may actually augment the human with the bot so that we can drive more reach and more frequency, particularly the frequency. I think John described it well. It's great for a rep sometimes to have that initial push. We could cause and provoke pull, but then we also stimulate that contextual pushback to the physician. So a number of commercial applications there, similar on the patient side, what I'd say, but maybe a little more focused on more traditional education, acquisition, engagement, onboarding into reimbursement programs, coverage programs, and ultimately therapeutic start.
Interesting. So not only do you go from bench right through to marketing, but you also go the entire drug life cycle in terms of, you know, pre-launch, I suppose, when you're preparing the market, but launch right through to loss of exclusivity. And that makes a lot of sense because one of the challenges is money for everyone. And so, you know, when they've got a set number of sales force in a company and there's new drugs coming through the pipeline, you know, how do I deploy my sales force the best? And so this way, when they're taking the sales force off drugs, they could actually still have a virtual sales force on the drug without, you know, having to increase the headcount. So I really like that application.
Yeah. So, and Andrew, one way of looking at it, it would be on the commercial side of the business. Every scenario now where you have a digital touch point,
mm-hmm.
that digital touch point can be turned from content to conversation, right? So mm-hmm. one of the kind of the core examples that we build a lot of is taking a brand.com
mm-hmm.
site, as Richard said, designed for acquisition for a consumer as well as managing patient and physician. But if you look at the consumer acquisition side, we can deploy a bot on that part of the website. And I think the analogy would be if you had the opportunity to talk to a prospect to acquire them, you probably wouldn't just let them randomly wander around a piece of content. You would probably want to guide them through a set of conversations that would actually get them to that point where they can make the appropriate decision to talk to a physician. And so there's different stages in that journey, and a bot can literally, you know, intercept the patient on the homepage, initiate a conversation that starts with one topic and then move them through a series of topics to get them to that point. And so it's, you know, that's actually a scenario where a push-driven bot or a button-driven bot can be the best solution to drive the objective of the business, which in that case is acquisition. So I would literally say that for our clients, they should be thinking in pharma that mm-hmm. everywhere you have a digital touch point now,
mm-hmm.
could be website, could be e-detail,
mm-hmm.
All of these can be turned into a conversational experience.
Nice.
Right? It's kind of like, you know, we heard from one of our clients who said, like, you know, every single brand has a website now,
mm-hmm.
lots of digital touch points. If we're sitting here in, you know, 2, 3, 4 years out, each one of those will have either deployed a conversational experience on that digital touch point, or as we've seen with some of our clients, that digital touch point is now a conversational experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There is no opportunity to go searching around to try to find content. The only experience is interacting through a conversational you know, experience with that web or digital touch point.
What about, I mean, I really love that, and I'm just thinking a little more broadly now. So if a pharma company wanted to put one of their conversation health chatbots somewhere else, like on a doctor's network, you know, or somewhere like that, would that be possible? Obviously, with the permission of the network.
Yeah, we tried not to pay for that, but no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the inherent nature of conversational experience and the platform that we've built is that ability to deploy that experience throughout multiple third-party destinations.
Nice.
And I think, you know, as we talked about pull, you know, really the ideal opportunity that is as a physician is pulling information. He may not be coming to your website or to, you know, something that you've designed to resolve that question. But if we can actually intercept that physician on their journey to find that information, how powerful is that?
Mm.
So deploying it on a third party, for example, physician portal,
yeah,
and deploying that next to content around diabetes, you know, a particular topic, mm, we can actually present the conversational window, let's call it,
yeah,
at that moment. And that's the opportunity for pharma to say, I'm here, mm, to answer your questions, and here are the values that I bring to you. And so that becomes that incredible moment where the physician on his journey is exposed to that pharmaceutical value proposition.
A really good example of that could be conference websites, right? Mm. Conference facilities. So today, many of our conferences have gone virtual this year. That doesn't mean that the physician, if I'm at ESMO this week or some other conference in the months ahead, I may still want to engage in real time, about new clinical data, clinical science that's coming out about a molecule or a tumor type, whatever that may be. The chatbot has the ability to do that in real time as papers are being presented. So yes, deploying those capabilities is really relevant and powerful for physicians.
I think if I was a pharma company doing this, I would want it everywhere. I would be wanting to deploy on my website. I'd want it on, you know, medical journal sites. I'd want it on doctor networks, hospital networks, wherever you could get it, because then you're having that, you're interacting everywhere that they are and bringing them into the conversation nicely.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really interesting point. I mean, this is an industry which is predicated and founded upon the power of conversation.
Mm.
I hope we can all believe that there's greater power in conversation than there is in content. This is why we have human interactions. You know, I think that when I was practicing, I recognized early on when I was first exposed to conversational solutions that this overcame that barrier of human scale, right? When I was having conversations with my patients, those were the most powerful moments and oftentimes would determine the successful outcome or not, mm-hmm, of that patient. Unfortunately, I was not available to have conversations on demand, mm-hmm, with my patients 24/7 when they needed it. Not even to mention that, you know, in that live face-to-face interaction, oftentimes patients are embarrassed, mm-hmm, or don't feel comfortable asking questions they can ask of the bot. So bots bring scale to that healthcare professional interaction. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, during my experience as a physician, some of the most powerful moments I had with pharma was when an excellent, well-informed sales rep was with me. Right? Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned earlier, they don't scale, right?
Yeah.
But you brought up, Richard, you brought up these great new use cases of conferences, et cetera, et cetera. I think, mm-hmm, if we all go back 25 years ago to when we had the early days of the web, and I remember in 94, 95, what were we building? We were building corporate websites.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, it took us years and years and years to evolve to the kind of the very mature offerings that we have. One thing I would say to your point, Andre, is that pharma has been a very fast mover in this, you know, I call this the third horizon of digital. We went, mm-hmm, from web, we went into the social app horizon, now we're into the conversational horizon. I think pharma does inherently, because of the conversational power of their business,
mm-hmm,
sees this as a massive new opportunity. But to your point, they're now exploring all of those different use cases,
yeah,
and determining which ones bring the greatest ROI.
Yeah.
Of course, COVID has affected that dramatically, but it's going to be super exciting over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years as pharma understands this new kind of channel, this new opportunity, and brings it to bear against their business challenges.
It made me also think about CRM systems. So have you worked with like Veeva and those kind of CRM systems to integrate it into that yet, or is that on the horizon?
No, so yes, of course, we work extensively with these providers, whether it's Veeva, Salesforce, or many or IQVIA.
Yeah.
In many cases, it's important as we engage with Dr. Andre, it's important that the organization develops. If I step back a little bit, the opportunity for organizations and brands is to develop lifelong digital relationships now with their physicians.
Yeah.
So whenever I'm interacting with Dr. Andre, the bot is powerful in conversing, but we need CRM systems to develop the institutional memory mm-hmm. of that conversation. So mm-hmm. that next time Dr. Andre comes back to us, we can acknowledge the welcome mat. Mm-hmm. Hey, last time we talked about, do you want to build on some of that? Do you want to access some of those resources? Or can I help you anew with something else? That's part one, I think, of CRM systems. The other piece, though, they become wonderful and rich aggregates of information, whether it's for that next best response to Dr. Andre, or at aggregate, what are we seeing on, what are some of the behaviors we're seeing from our physicians? Are they struggling with some clinical aspects of our product? Mm. How do we fix that through medical education and others? Are they competitively engaging in a lot of other questions about a new therapeutic? Mm. How do we deal with that in the marketplace? And very similar analogies exist on the patient side. Where are they struggling with their therapy? Where are they failing in their journeys and others? So again, CRM systems and data infrastructure yeah. are really key to that.
Yeah, and on the patient side, you know, I've worked with many brands that have brand ambassador call centers so that the patient could call up and help. And this kind of thing would really revolutionize that, because if the patient at 3 a.m. is having a problem, there's the conversational AI to actually help them with that problem anytime. And that would save, I assume, huge amounts of costs with all the call center applications that you've got as well.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think I'll bring it back to John's scalability. In probably 3 months from now, we will be vaccinating tens of millions of people a week for probably 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
The reality is, whether you're a patient or physician, you will have lots of needs and lots of questions, and we'll seek guidance on what to do, how to do, mm-hmm. and is this an adverse event or a product complaint or whatever not. Our pharma, our life science companies truly cannot scale their humans yeah. on servicing physicians or patients when that all starts to happen.
That's,
technology
yeah.
can scale. Still That's provide a really very cool. warm, friendly, conversational experience, but almost at unlimited scale. And frankly, we'll be testing that again in 3 months from now.
Just started to build on that.
Yeah.
What's important in bots is that, you know, not every query to a bot is automatically answered by the bot,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's important to, you know, as we said, when you understand what the intent is,
mm-hmm.
We have a policy engine or capability that says for this conversation, mm-hmm. we actually want to escalate that to a human
sure.
right away. This conversation, we want to have a rich conversation about.
Yeah.
This one, as Richard said, could go to an AE engine and response model. This one could go to just serving up appropriate content, be more of a conversational search response. And so the ability to understand all of the intents and appropriately tag them is inherent in our platform, but really, really important, because there are certain conversations you do want to have humans involved.
Yeah.
Right? So really what we like to do is kind of unburden humans from routine, you know, interactions that a bot can manage better
yeah.
or appropriately, right? And then have them spend their time very effectively on the more complex conversations.
That's nice. And so if someone wanted to, well, actually, before we get into that, could you maybe, I know you've probably got hundreds of case studies, but could you think of one specific client, healthcare client, that used this, what their problem was, what they used it for, and what the results were?
Sure, I'll talk generically because we can't.
Of course, I know, yes.
But I will say one of our clients developed, so under the guise of physicians are looking for greater and greater self-service access, but particularly off-label information or scientific mm-hmm. information consumption. But our clients has completely built out an entire portfolio of conversations or essentially conversational AI support
mm-hmm.
And developed an entire fresh new portal centered around literally ask and I'll provide you an answer. So no longer a multi-click, multi-depth, multi-PDF monograph page. Literally, Andre, welcome to our Ask facility. How can I help you? I literally engage with a quick answer, and I'm taken through a conversational journey to get me to that answer very quickly. Frankly, that's scaling locally, globally now. That is probably becoming very quickly a benchmark for the industry in terms of ask, respond, ease of consumption. No more scroll, click, view, literally ask, response. And over the course of 12 months, that client has seen a 10x increase in its traffic to its HCP portal supporting just that. Right, so it speaks to just massive HCP need. Our HCPs want to engage us. They want to do it at the time of their need, and frankly, we've learned 40% of the time off hours. This facility does that really well. So again, massive scaling to meet customer need. The other piece along the way is that it's streamlined. To John's point, it's massively streamlined work in other areas of business, whether it's with MSLs, call center, and others. But for them, tremendous payback, less than a year, and engaging a broader audience than they were a year ago.
And that's a great solution to that whole problem that we've had with COVID, particularly with digital overload. You know, to see those kind of results is amazing when every company is throwing digital stuff out there. And yet with your solution, you're getting this massive increase in the doctors actually engaging in it, which is a huge win for the company and your technology's expertise.
And in terms of reach on that project, in that market, 10% of physicians in that market over the last 12 months have reached out to that digital destination to engage. So 10% may not sound like a large number, but it's remarkable.
It is.
Experience. Now, I think what's also really interesting in that is that that customer recognized that there's something that you must do whenever you launch a new digital experience, which is you need to promote it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like the lessons that we learned from building websites. You know, you can have the world's best website. If doctors are not aware of the opportunity, they're not going to engage with it. And they've done an amazing job of using all of its traditional physical and digital touch points to drive awareness of physicians of that new opportunity. I think, Richard, to build on that, in another market, this other market being the U.S., you know, we've just launched an enterprise-wide text and voice bot across over 30 brands for a client. And so unlike the use case that Richard just talked about, this was this customer's first foray into conversational AI that actually has gone for a full enterprise, recognizing that this is not a one-year, you know, kind of campaign. For them, this is a five-year journey to truly understand the revolution of conversational experiences and how that will come into the enterprise. What is really exciting about that is the recognition that there is a use case that's very powerful for physicians. That's the ability for being in your clinical experience, in your digital day, and to literally, in a multitasking experience, be able to work and voice a question to Google Home in your office and have it respond. What that means is from the physician perspective, literally, it's like me having 30 or 40 MSLs in my office sitting there from every manufacturer that I work with. And they're simply waiting for me to ask them a question. A simple question where I just want to be reminded or confirm something, or something more complex, and I can get an immediate answer to that. From a physician perspective, this literally transforms the entire experience of working with pharma. Pharma becomes at that moment, on-demand colleague to me. Kind of like when I think back to the early days when I was practicing of the quarter consult, when I would be able to actually talk to another physician in my practice to get, you know, some experience or some knowledge because I needed it at that moment. Well, nowadays, very difficult to have quarter consults, especially as doctors are moving to telehealth. So the ability to have pharma there as a true partner to me is a big, massive transformation in all of our lives.
Absolutely.
Andre, I'll build on John's point. As we described a couple of these clients, we've got, and obviously there's a handful more that I would call out. who've taken a five-year view, truly a five-year view of revolutionizing, transforming their business, right? Mm. We pay a lot of lip service to the words transformation in many respects. I think some clients have taken a bit more of an aggressive, bolder, patient, but also a fundamental change in their go-to-market strategy. And again, introducing self-service or pull into a marketing organizational mix is a significant shift in thinking, right? It's moving from promotion to customer service. And for those, their early journeys have all been positive, and they're now scaling to entire portfolios, entire geographies, and so on and so forth. The danger we see in the marketplace, you're alluding to that earlier, some manufacturers or life science companies have been a little more gun-shy, mm-hmm. have a little more or simple in their approach to digital. Mm-hmm. As our rep channel turned off, many just jumped a little more aggressively on email and remote detailing, mm-hmm. which worked for the first couple, 3 months of COVID, mm-hmm. but we very quickly oversaturated those channels. And once again, we're starting to see physicians close off their email channels and frankly say no to remote detailing. We're overwhelming, we're pushing out of cycle of need to our physicians, and these are important, powerful channels, but we're shutting them off by applying the same paradigms of Salesforce engagement to those digital channels. Mm. So there's a real, you can see a real dichotomy happening in the marketplace, and some life science companies truly leapfrogging and seeing building tomorrow today,
yeah.
while others are just on the adjacencies, leveraging more and more digital channels, but not fundamentally transforming how they go to market yeah. or service their physicians.
And I really like the fact that, I mean, you mentioned customer service, but actually what you do is even beyond that, because you're really getting to customer engagement and customer centricity, which is kind of the holy grail. Everyone talks in pharma about customer centricity, but this actually really does it. It puts the customer in the beginning, you know, in the center, and it's totally on their terms what they want, when they want it, which is amazing. Really like that. And then what about the actual onboarding? I mean, because there's so much natural language processing and there's so many regulations, I'm assuming you've got a fairly lengthy onboarding process, but then is it a subscription after that, or how does the whole process work?
Yeah, John, do you want to talk about the Canvas processed onboarding, and I can pick up thereafter.
Sure. I mean, one thing I would say is that onboarding just gets better and better the more projects you do, right? So
yeah.
we're kind of up into that zone now, around 20 clients, working on over, you know, north of 100 brands
yeah.
across Europe, North America, and Asia now. And so, you know, what that's given us is lots of opportunities to fail and to learn from those, to have a Exactly. very efficient onboarding phase mm-hmm. that, as Richard said, you know, follows a fairly standardized, you know, 12-step business canvas approach. And so mm-hmm. for all of our clients, we do have a very structured process that allows us roughly over kind of a 4 to 6 month period
okay.
and get the first, you know, bots in play, mm-hmm. which is important from the training perspective.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, in that process, as we discussed earlier, one has to understand what are the conversations that our customers are going to want to have with us.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, we also have to understand the conversations that we're going to want to have with our customers. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So doctors know what they don't know. Patients know what they don't know, but both of them don't know the things that they don't know, right?
Yeah.
And so it's important.
Unconscious incompetence,
those.
Yeah.
And some of those conversations are really, really important and have massive effects on patient outcome, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, an example of that might be that, you know, when I was working with my patients, they often would not, or typically you would never get a question from a patient saying, well, what's going to happen to me if I don't take my medications,
mm-hmm.
right? That's mm-hmm. not a question you typically get.
Yeah.
But that's a question that I would have with my patients. I would initiate that. So
yeah.
that's a push conversation that we would need to design and, of course, serve that conversation up at the right point in the patient's journey. And so once we understand the portfolio of conversations, both the pull and the push, that allows us then to get those conversations designed. And of course, we have to start doing the training, right?
Mm-hmm.
Each one of those intents is not just a conversation. Behind that lives the entities, the keywords, the synonyms that actually allow the NLU engine to match the utterance to the intent. So those are kind of the more basic, you know, elements of that initial strategic journey to get us to the point where the technical team is really deep in, which you can dive in on some of the integrations that are absolutely critical in that process.
That reminds me, I saw a statistic the other day about how a huge proportion of patients that aren't adhering because they haven't fully understood the instructions. And I think that, and that might be an amazing application for every drug to have, you know, that help in understanding things as, you know, because you have the consult with your doctor, depending on what the condition is, you might kind of be a bit shaken and thinking, oh my God, I've got, you know, and they've got all these thoughts going through their head, so they're not taking everything in. And so then having that as a backup would be amazing.
Well, it's not just backup. Remember, those experiences may range from, you know, 3 minutes, maybe up to a half hour, but
absolutely,
speaking of maybe a 7 minute interaction.
Yeah.
How many questions can a patient ask during 7 minutes if they feel comfortable asking? How many topics can I initiate with my patient during those 7 minutes? So I think what we tend to do is, you know, grab the most important things.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And maybe I can talk about two or three things. Maybe a patient may ask one or two. Of the portfolio of conversations that we need to have, both pull and push, to drive a patient to a great outcome, that is just a fraction, right? Because we are constrained by human face-to-face 7 minutes.
Yeah.
If you could remove that barrier of time and space to make it scalable through digital, you know, now we have the opportunity to have that significant number of conversations, and to the point earlier, you know, initiated by patients sometimes, initiated by brand at other times to really drive outcome.
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point as well,
One
of the great things about bots and conversational AI is the ability to go back and review the conversation, right? You know, with patients, as you said, you know, we all know that retention of accurate retention of information at point of care is roughly about 10%.
Yeah.
Right? We have 10% inaccurate retention, and 80% of actually what happens in that conversation at point of care is kind of left in the exam room on the floor, which is a waste of everyone's time. Right. And so are there ways, you know, to Richard's point, not just to do small incremental things, but to completely transform the way we drive healthcare success? I mean, we have an expression which we call, you know, conversational therapeutics.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Can conversations, well designed, well structured, delivered, you know, at the appropriate point in a journey, actually have a massive therapeutic benefit to the patient? So it becomes once again the combination of both the medication and the conversational program that drives the outcome.
Yeah. I mean, it just has so many, I mean, this is just, we're just talking sales and marketing mainly today. So, you know, just the applications, even just think every time we talk, we think of a new application there. So I can see why you've got so many clients and, you know, really pushing it out a lot across a lot of brands. And it just seems like the answer to so many farmers' dreams right now with the engagement
I think we'd be careful. It's not the answer, right?
It's a good one, though. It's a pretty good one.
It's another,
one.
You know, tool in their toolbox of things that they can do, right? And as Richard always says, it is integrated into all of them.
Of course,
right? It's part of that omni-channel experience. And so I don't want to hype it too much. You know, one of the things we try to be is very pragmatic.
Good idea.
And understand that we're doing things that have never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And I can honestly say that a number of our clients really understand that concept. They come in eyes wide and aware of that, but actually they are excited about that opportunity to venture into new areas. And part of that means that there will be failures, but there's also great successes.
Mm-hmm.
And learning from those successes and then doubling down on those and amplifying, you know, to that point, scaling globally is where the fast movers are seeing really great benefit.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that, you know, I don't, one thing I don't want to do is overhype this. It has amazing opportunities, but we need to be very strategic in where it's applied and when we do those.
Yeah. No, good point. But it does, you know, the engagement results that you got from that example that you gave before were astounding. I mean, absolutely amazing. So impressive, very impressive. So thank you both. I mean, I think one other final thing would, well, two final things I've thought of now is there any advice you would be giving to a pharma company that's going, okay, this is really what I need? They get, you know, it's 4 to 6 months, so early quarter one, quarter two, if they started now, then, you know, they could start rolling it out. But is there anything they need to think about in terms of content or process before they come to you that would make it even faster to, you know, easier to implement? Like data?
I'll build a little bit. If I step back, I do think one of the most fundamental pieces of advice I would provide is, but still think of revolutionizing, truly transforming how you go to market.
Yeah.
John's absolutely right. We need to be eyes wide open and very pragmatic and systematic in how we do this, how we integrate this into a broader sales and marketing mix and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
It's a powerful capability, but it needs to fit within the concept and the design of true transformation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is, we used the words a little earlier. It's truly bringing customer service for the first time and providing whole customer experience. That requires a shift in mindset and a lot of capabilities around it.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to be very ambitious in order to take on the capability and surround it and build it to success, but always being pragmatic.
Yeah.
Measure, optimize. This is not a silver bullet. And by itself, will be an island if treated as such.
Mm. No, that's a good point.
And so to kind of dive in maybe a little bit on that, because I think it's a great question. I think that as in all digital solutions, it's not a technology problem, right? Or that we're resolving. It's literally a combination of, I think, three key things. And you have to look at it from both the understanding of the business.
Mm-hmm.
This is absolutely critical. You don't want to be, you know, diving into solve things that don't mean anything. So you have to have that business strategic direction of where you're going and understand where conversational AI fits those, addresses those challenges. But underpinning both that is an art and a science. So yes, you have to have the technology, right? And that technology needs to address the highly complex and regulated constraints of the pharmaceutical industry. But of course, those constraints also provide a sandbox, let's call it, for great creativity.
Yeah.
Okay. A bot that doesn't have a great conversational experience, irrespective of what the technology delivers, the user will be disappointed. Right? Mm-hmm. Users don't care about the technology.
Yeah.
What they care about is that conversational experience that they are going through.
Getting the information they need.
We apply just as much time, effort into building a great conversation team.
Mm-hmm.
These are doctors and pharmacists and consumer writers who can actually craft these structured interactions that feel human-like, that are expert, but most fundamentally feel like you are engaging with another human. Now, of course, we make it very clear, and we understand this, that we always let our users know this is not a human, right? This is a bot. It has certain capabilities that go beyond a human, but certain areas that it isn't as capable as a human, right? But it provides that new opportunity. So I think, you know, our clients, you know, our companies that are thinking of going into conversational AI will fail if they don't address all three of those key pillars. Great business strategy, great platform that's been designed and understanding the needs of pharma, right? And thirdly, how do you build great conversations that then meet the needs of three distinct users, consumers, patients, and HCPs? All are different, right? And the way you engage them through a conversational experience is unique and different. And I think that all three of those are required for a great outcome.
Absolutely. And then one final thing, what could you offer the Ilaris members in terms of some kind of bonus or something that would be useful to them if they become a client of yours?
Well, I mean, I'll take an initial stab. Richard, you can dive in. I mean, I definitely, all of our clients have access to free Starbucks when they come to Toronto. I mean, I think maybe just to dive a little deeper, I think, you know, we look at this as a, you know, this is a passion for us, right? You know, we do such a massive opportunity in this transformation. So one of the things we're happy to do is with your contacts, your clients, is, you know, provide them with a free kind of consulting, you know, opportunity. So this typically over an hour, hour and a half, we can take someone who is not deep into the conversational AI world through a bit of a roadmap, a conversational canvas,
okay,
to help them understand what are the business challenges that we can address.
That would be great.
And then go through those 12 different steps. So at the end of that, they will have a fairly well articulated roadmap of how they would, what they would build, what the conversation sets would be, the personas, the integrations, the regulatory challenges that need to be addressed, how they would market and promote, all these kind of the core foundations of a conversational solution. We can bring that to them over roughly an hour and a half a time period.
That would be fantastic. I'm sure everyone would want that because it helps get
I don't know if everyone wakes up each day going, I want to build a chatbot. But for those
those who want the your product is what I'm thinking about. So.
Yes, let's be clear on it. This is a pull opportunity, right? It's not a push one.
So yes.
If that's something that they're interested in, we're more than happy to provide that experience. Of course, after we've done that, we'll probably put a little bit of push on some marketing stuff, right?
Yeah,
some
sales. Absolutely. Right?
So of course, whenever we ideate these great concepts, we'd love to see them come to life in a pragmatic way.
Yeah.
Yes. Richard, anything else you might want to add on to that?
No, that's a great build, right? So it's getting to what you said earlier, Don, which is what's the problem we're trying to solve, and how do we be both ambitious but pragmatic on solving it? Mm. And I think a lot of, as John said, I think we've got the technology part of it.
Yeah.
How do we help you with the conversation set and the transformation, change management around that is where I think we can bring a lot of value up front.
Yeah, that's really nice. Wow, it's been so fascinating. I do really, really love what you guys are doing. I think it's just revolutionary in this space. And I'd like to thank you both for being with me today. And I would definitely like to do a few more of these discussions on some of the other applications of your approach. But certainly, it's been so illuminating for the sales and marketing side today. It's been incredible. So thank you both so much for your time.
Our pleasure, thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, cheers now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.